This is Homespun C-SPAN, and I'm sitting in for Christopher Maxwell. This is Sunny Gardner, and I am in Studio B at WRIR 97.3 LPFM, Richmond Independent Radio. With me is Betsy Brinson, an independent public historian and oral history consultant. Betsy has been named Peacemaker of the Year by the Richmond Peace Education Center. In her bio, the first thing she states is that she's a scholar. To me, that means she is a lifelong learner and open-minded and inquisitive. Betsy Brinson has been actively involved in peace and social justice concerns for many years. She's a dedicated Richmond Peace Education Center volunteer who in 2007 played a key role in organizing the Eyes Wide Open exhibit, a display of combat boots and shoes remembering Virginians and Iraqis killed during the past 5 years of the war. She was also chair of Richmond Peace Education Center's effort to offer civilian options to young people being recruited for military service. She's on the board at Quaker House, which is in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and provides support to American troops around the world who are seeking to disengage from the military. Betsy is historian for the Witness to a Century Project of the Virginia Historical Society and Community Idea Station's Public Television. She's the founder and lead interviewer of the GI Rights Oral History Project. She's also historian and archivist for Richmond Friends Meeting. That's where I met her. Betsy Brinson, welcome to WRIR, and thank you for making the time to come and tell us about your work. Congratulations to you on receiving this award. Would you please begin by telling us about your current work?
Well, first off, thank you, Patricia, for inviting me to join you today in a conversation about change and recognition and whatnot. And my current work, actually, I'm coming to the end of a project that you referred to, the Witness to a Century Project, which is a joint partnership with the Virginia Historical Society and the Community Ideas Station. And in this project, we interviewed people who were 100 to 105 years of age, and we asked them to reflect upon the history of the last 100 years. So we talked about topics like illness, education, civil rights, war, those kinds of things, scientific inventions. And we did 23 audio interviews, and then we went back to 10 of those individuals with the film crew and did selected stories. And that film is almost complete and will actually show on WCVE Community Idea Station later this fall. And then the project will then be incorporated into an educational packet with questions and whatnot that will be used in senior citizen centers, nursing homes, other groups of elderly people who want to sort of reminisce, if you would, about the last 100 years in American history. I'm happy to say that all of these individuals that we interviewed last year, actually, for the film, all 10 of them are still alive.
That's good. I hear once you get over the hump, you can live forever. Although I heard that was 50 initially.
Right. Well, there's some pretty amazing people in the group.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like a really rewarding project, because when you think about just what's happened in my lifetime, and I'm just over half a century old, the changes have just been astounding. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your Eyes Wide Open exhibit.
Well, the Eyes Wide Open exhibit is actually a project of the American Friends Service Committee. And
that's a Quaker organization?
It is. And they initially had an Eyes Wide Open exhibit that incorporated all of the soldiers, American soldiers in the U.S. who had died in the war. And it's an exhibit that's laid out with boots to signify each individual soldier, along with shoes for Iraqi civilians. A year or so ago, we brought the Virginia portion of the exhibit here to VCU and to Walmart for a 3-day run out in parking lot.
And I saw it.
It's an opportunity for people to walk through, to reflect, to listen to the names being read from the podium, and also for families to come. And we did have families and friends of deceased soldiers who came and left their own little memorials, you know, attached to the boots. Since that time, the exhibit is now owned by the Richmond Peace Education Center, And along with the Richmond Friends Meeting and the Midlothian Friends Meeting, they take it around the state. And it's been amazing to me in the 6 months that we've actually had the exhibit here, how many different groups have used it around the state. So it's obviously a very meaningful exhibit to people who see it.
Mm-hmm. I was stunned by it. Walking among those shoes and realizing what they represented really made me weep. So, Betsy, at what kind of places is the exhibit being shown?
College campuses, mm-hmm. downtown centers, a number of the faith organizations around the state in their annual summer gatherings mm-hmm. are using it. And, of course, those meetings actually pick up large numbers of people from around the state as well.
Mm-hmm. That's really good to keep that before us in that way. You also mentioned the Quaker House.
Quaker House is a 40-year-old military counseling anti-war program out of the Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, North Carolina area. Mm-hmm. It's particularly important to me because I actually grew up at Fort Bragg, Fayetteville. I'm the daughter, if you will, the Army brat of 8 generations of military. So it's sort of interesting that have become a pacifist over the years, and that actually goes back probably to my late high school years. But in any event, I have been sitting on the board at Quaker House. I think it's a very important organization in its programs, and most specifically, it's GI Rights Hotline participation. And the GI Rights Hotline is a national coalition, if you will, of groups around the country that offer 24-hour hotline service to soldiers and their families and friends who need questions answered about the military and mostly about getting out of the military. So, and at this point in time, Quaker House is handling about 12,000 calls a year.
And Quaker House can be reached by calling 919-663-7122. Leave a message and they will call you back. So, Betsy, what kind of calls do you get at Quaker House?
They come from all over the world, many from Iraq, from soldiers stationed in Iraq who just have had enough and they want to know how they can get out. We also had an American soldier using the services of Quaker House about 5-6 years ago who wanted to become a conscientious objector. The military denied him that. His name is Jeremy Hinsman, and he basically elected to go to Canada and to desert, to resist, however you want to use the word. And he was the lead plaintiff in the litigation all the way up through the Canadian courts that would ask for permission of American soldiers to stay in Canada with their families when they have resisted the war. Unfortunately, we lost that all the way up. And so Jeremy Hinsman and his young family, as a wife, Na, and a son, Liam, who's about 6 now, and a new baby of about a month, who, because she was born in Canada, is a Canadian citizen, he will have, on September 22nd, his deportation hearing, and he will be deported back in handcuffs to Fort Bragg on the 23rd. Where he will stand trial and is probably looking at a felony conviction of about 5 years in military prison.
Is this happening to a lot of military employees?
Well, all of them that have gone to Canada at this point who have resisted the war are technically deserters in the military perspective, and many of them will come back, will be deported. There will be others undoubtedly who will elect to try and stay hidden. The October election in Canada hopefully will produce a new prime minister who is more supportive of the soldiers who elect not to adhere to military practice, which in many countries, of course, think that our involvement in Iraq is in violation of Geneva Conventions. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of support out there for this.
Hmm. Well, hopefully that'll happen in our administration, too. Is there a way that young people who are being recruited by the military in the schools can prepare? Is there a way for them to document or track the activities that they participate in so that they can show that they are conscientious objectors if the time comes for the draft? Or?
There is a way to document that, and young people who know to do this begin early on to build a portfolio of letters, essays, other materials that show that they have, in good conscience, been a peace supporter, a pacifist, if you will, for a long time. But to some degree, that doesn't really matter at the moment, because it does matter, but we don't have a draft. So if they don't want to sign up, they don't have to. The truth in recruitment campaigning that's being done around the country is focused more on young people who maybe are wavering, who see the ads that the military puts out and think that, well, they can't afford to go to college, but they could get college if they went into the Army or other branches. They could learn, get job training. And so they sign up. And then they find that it isn't exactly what they thought it was going to be. So the Truth in Recruitment Project, going into schools and working with young people in other areas, is designed to help them, one, know that there are alternatives. There are ways that they can go to college. There are ways to get other kinds of job training that you don't necessarily have to join the military. And if they really intend to move forward, that they look at their contract very seriously before they sign it. Mm-hmm. Because once you've signed the contract, it's pretty hard to back out. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in the military and you decide that you are a conscientious objector, and that has happened to a number of young soldiers, there are military regulations for that, but they're very strict. And they're very hard for most people to say that they could answer that honestly in all circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Betsy. That's useful information in these days, because it's certainly possible, as we run out of willing cannon fodder, that the draft would be reinstated in this long war. Tell us about this award and the auction and the dinner party. It's one of the highlights of the year, I believe, in Richmond, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly become one of my highlights this year. So, well, the auction is a lot of fun. There's a silent auction, and then there's a live auction with some competitive bidding for fun items, mm-hmm. and including things like vacation homes in Puerto Rico. Ooh. And vacation homes at the beach. And
now, where do these prizes come from?
People volunteer them.
Oh, so you could give something to
sure,
be auctioned.
Sure,
at, oh.
sure. In fact, every year I give an oral history mm-hmm. interview that I will agree to whoever bids and wins this. I will interview any person they want. Usually it's a mother, father, grandparent, and they want to collect the family stories, you know, to pass on. But there are all kinds of art objects and services. One mm-hmm. that's very popular is they're a group of people who come together, and they offer to bring you a dinner to your house every month. You know, soup and salad and bread, and pretty good cooks involved mm-hmm. in all of that. So it's great fun. This year it's Saturday, November 8th. People can sign up by calling the Richmond Peace Education Center office. Mm-hmm. This is a big fundraiser for Richmond Peace Education Center. So the money that is generated from a totally volunteer audience is used to pay for the Richmond Peace Education programs.
And they have a lot of good programs. We have them in our studio often to talk about them. Paul Fleischer and the Youth Peace Collective, I'm not sure of their exact name, but they have been working on conflict resolution issues and things like that around Richmond for years now. Yeah. Well, I want to congratulate you personally, Betsy, because even though I've known you for a long time, I didn't know what you've been doing all these years. And I think the Peacemaker of the Year Award is aptly presented to you because Richmond Peace Education Center says it's to recognize a Richmond area or Virginia resident who has contributed significantly in the struggle for peace and justice. And from talking to you, it seems like you're definitely one of those people. And Betsy Brinson will receive her award at the Peace Center's annual fundraising auction and dinner Saturday, November 8th at the Troutman Sanders Building.
Can I say a final word?
Yes, definitely.
You know, one of the reasons that that I have the privilege to be engaged in some of the activities is that I'm now 66 years old and I'm retired from full-time work. And it's a great time for people who've had very busy lives to actually do more volunteer work. And Richmond Peace Education Center and other social justice organizations are always looking for volunteers. And so if any of your listeners are interested in that, I would encourage them to call the office. You know, it's a privilege for me to be honored, but I'm really an ordinary person like you and most of us out there. But I think it's significant that change starts with ordinary people. And there's a Mahatma Gandhi quote that I really like that I'd like to share, and that is, be the change that you wish to see in the world. And we're talking about change a lot these days, and change hopefully will happen at the national level, but for change to happen, it has to happen at the personal level too.
The Peacemaker of the Year Award is presented annually by the Richmond Peace Education Center to recognize Richmond area or Virginia residents who have contributed significantly in the struggle for peace and justice. Betsy Brinson will receive her award at the Peace Center's annual fundraising auction and dinner Saturday, November 8th at the Troutman Sanders Building. Reservations for this event are now available. Contact the Peace Center at 232-1002 or at reservations@rpec.org. Cost is $25 in advance and $30 at the door, and it all goes toward their programs. You are listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and this is an interview with Betsy Brinson, the 2008 Peacemaker of the Year.
The Eyes Wide Open exhibit also produced an amount of really good data about the cost of the war to you and me and every other person in the U.S. today. And if you look at those figures, just in terms of taxpayers in Richmond, Virginia, for example, it averages out to be about $341 per day per person in the city of Richmond. So,
well, let me clarify that. It's costing me $341 a day to have a war.
Right. Right. In your taxes, what you contribute in your taxes as it is averaged out across the total Richmond population.
Well, I have a magazine here that asks the question, why pray for peace and pay for war?
Right. Well, that's very appropriate. That's very appropriate.
And oh, my goodness.
If you look at that approved spending for the war to date, and then you look at what we could spend it for if we weren't spending it for war, and again, looking at Richmond figures, here's what they tell us. We could, for 1 year, we could provide 93,000 people with health care in Richmond for a year. We could employ over 7,000 public safety officers for a year. We could employ 5,000 music and arts teachers for 1 year. We could provide 41,000 scholarships for university students for 1 year. We could offer affordable housing units to about 2,200 people per year. And it goes on and on and on. You know, we could hire 4,800 elementary school teachers for a year. So it's just amazing, you know, how our money is being spent on the war when it could go for other, you know, very critical needs that we have as a population today.
Some of that information is on one of the posters available for downloading at rpec.org. What can we do, Betsy?
Well, vote.
Vote.
We can vote in the upcoming election.
And you have to register to vote by October 6th.
That's good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You can work in the campaigns. Mm-hmm. You can write letters to the editor. You can attend various meetings that come up from time to time to talk about social justice issues and how we look to change the last 8 years, for sure. But it's hard, you know, because there are lots and lots and lots of us who do all those things, and we sort of think, are we doing enough? Mm-hmm. You know, are we doing enough? Does it matter? You know, but, you know, I think the only thing that kind of reassures me is that, is as we said in the beginning, change starts with ordinary people. And if we have lots and lots of ordinary people making change, we can make it happen. We can make a difference.
We can. I hear people speak of a sense of powerlessness, that there's nothing we can do as individuals. But there is. It'll take a long time, maybe even 100 years, to build peace. Chuck Fager, the director of Quaker House, encourages us to accept that. It's a fact that we didn't get here in a day or a week or a year, and it will take a long time to get to that next big peace. And as you say, it is the ordinary people who will bring it to life.
Well, I certainly agree with you.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for your time, Betsy. So what are you going to do later on today?
Well, I'm going to go teach an oral history class.
Aha.
Well, so?
If I did not have a previous engagement, I would certainly consider that, because radio is oral history.
Well, and it's actually interesting. I was looking at an essay this morning that I hadn't looked at in a long time, and it's sort of about some of the origins of oral history, which, of course, oral tradition has been there forever, you know, particularly among indigenous peoples around the world and Appalachia and whatnot. But I was struck by this author saying that he started out as a journalist. And I think that's true. A lot of oral historians that I have met over the years start out in journalism. And so, you know, there are lots of similarities mm-hmm. there. So if you do radio shows, you can do oral history. They're variations of difference, mm-hmm. but it all comes from interviewing and knowing how to interview and how to be respectful and listen.
And the preserving the knowledge that we have could enable us to not make the mistakes that we've made before.
Absolutely. And I think that one of the things that inspires me to gather oral histories is the preservation piece of social justice work. And those tend to be the movements, and the people involved in those movements are the ones who don't get printed in some of the publications. But we have the oral histories that then get used in a whole variety of ways, books, you know, film, theater, radio. So it becomes a valuable legacy to have those stories.
Where are your oral histories stored?
All over the world, actually. Depends on the project. Mm-hmm. You know, Kentucky, North Carolina, Virginia, New Zealand,
New York. You mean like the Virginia State Library? Or?
No, the Virginia Historical Society, okay. Virginia Commonwealth University, the Holocaust Museum. I think those are the Richmond-based mm-hmm. archives where I have materials. University of North Carolina.
But all over the world?
Right.
That's right. You spent some time in New Zealand. Did you do oral history while you were there?
I did, actually. I did a very interesting project there with the Library of New Zealand, which is the primary holder of oral history materials. And they have their own 20, 30-year legacy with oral tradition. The project that I did was small. I think I did 12 interviews over a year, but they were with the oral historians who sort of founded the movement of oral history in New Zealand. And a couple of them had been journalists mm-hmm. early on. And so it was great fun for me as a guest in New Zealand to actually have the privilege of sitting down with my tape recorder and getting a couple of hours or so with each of them, you know, about the history of oral history in New Zealand.
Huh. Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks again.
Okay.
Let's give this a wrap and we'll take a little break and then I'll sit down and edit it a little. See what we can
okay.
do with it.
Yeah. And I'll go across the way and buy a doormat.
Did you see our doormat as you came in?
No.
I said, I'm not your doormat.
Oh, I did see it.
I did see it. Here's a list of websites we talked about in this interview. There's quakerhouse.org or phone 919-663-7122 to reach the GI Rights Hotline. The American Friends Service Committee, AFSC.org, and richmondfriends.org. That's the Quaker meeting in Richmond. This has been an interview with Betsy Brinson, historian and peace activist. I'm Sunny Gardner, hosting Homespun C-SPAN on WRIR 97.3 LPFM and online at WRIR.org. Tune in next week for a brand new show.